week on Business Brief, we'll learn about the increased interest in lab-grown diamonds in Missouri. Then we'll hear from the chief equity officer of Missouri's cannabis program about efforts to ensure equity in the young industry. Welcome to Business Brief, Missouri Business Alert's podcast focused on the business news and issues shaping the state. My name is Siggy Reese, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ansley Franco. Ansley, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing swell. I just wanted to let you know, happy birthday.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Yeah, the day we're filming this, it is my birthday. It's my birthday week.
Also Pi Day.
Also Pi Day. And St. Patrick's Day is on
Sunday. Yeah, so. But you know, all the festivities are going to be on Saturday.
That's true.
Do you have any plans?
Honestly, no. I know a lot of people who are traveling to St. Louis because there's like the big parade
oh,
and
okay.
stuff. But no, it's I'm just gonna be like celebrating my birthday. Mizzou is having their spring football game, so that's
I did
super
hear
exciting.
The black and yellow, is that what it's called?
I think that's what it's called. Okay. Yeah, but that's super exciting. Go Mizzou football! I love Mizzou football. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, spring is in the air too. It's just a good time all around.
Yeah. It thunderstormed terribly here.
True. Yes,
but
it
I'm
did.
Glad it didn't happen during the day.
Thank God.
You know, May showers, April showers bring May flowers. So.
But it's March.
Well, just ahead of ourselves here.
It's okay.
Maybe it'll continue on.
Yes. Hey, spring is coming. That's what's important. That's what matters. You ready to get into this week's headlines?
Yep.
Consumer prices in February were 3.2% higher than they were a year earlier, according to federal data released Tuesday. This rate exceeds the Federal Reserve Bank's 2% inflation target. Also, the month-to-month change in the Consumer Price Index accelerated from 0.3 points in January to 0.4 points in February. According to the report, inflation was driven by rising shelter and gas prices.
Dollar Tree will close nearly 1,000 stores after a surprise fourth-quarter loss. The discount retail chain owns both Dollar Tree and Family Dollar. It plans to close about 600 Family Dollar stores in the first half of this year and 370 Family Dollar and 30 Dollar Tree stores over the next several years. Dollar Tree and Family Dollar have dozens of stores across the state, with locations in more than 120 cities.
Fontbonne University announced Monday it will close after its 2025 summer term. The 100-year-old Catholic liberal arts institution will close its doors following years of dwindling enrollment and financial losses. 15 years ago, 3,000 students were enrolled. This semester, fewer than 800 students remain. In the coming months, neighboring Washington University will purchase Fontbonne's 16-acre campus. WashU has not disclosed plans for the site.
Nurses at two hospitals in the Kansas City area are preparing for contract negotiations with hospital operator HCA. The nurses at Research Medical Center and Menorah Medical Center say they want a contract that will resolve critical issues with staffing, safety, and services. Understaffing is causing nurses to manage more patients and lower their quality of care. A spokesperson from HCA Midwest said that the health system hired 842 new staff members at Research and Menorah in 2023. HCA Midwest owns 7 hospitals in the Kansas City area.
70% of teachers say they have seriously considered leaving the profession, according to a survey released this week by the Missouri State Teachers Association. During the height of the pandemic in 2021, 79% seriously thought about leaving. Of the 2,300 MSTA members who responded to the survey, 63% listed stress and student behavior as reasons why they would exit, and 59% said lack of pay. We will return to Business Brief after this quick message from our sponsors.
Are you ready to be inspired? Since 2013, That's What She Said has provided a platform for women's powerful voices, strengthening communities across the country. On Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at the Missouri Theater, the second annual That's What She Said Columbia, presented by Stevens College, will feature the powerful stories of 10 women from our community. 25% of the ticket sales will support maternal health initiatives via the Boone Hospital Foundation and MU Healthcare. Find us at facebook.com/shesaidcomo and purchase your tickets now.
For our first story, we're talking about something that shines bright.
Would that be diamonds? I feel like that was a Rihanna reference.
It was definitely a Rihanna reference. Diamonds, of course, are a staple of fancy jewelry, but do you know that there's two types of diamonds, lab-grown and mined?
Yeah, I think I've heard about lab-grown diamonds. How are they different from mined diamonds?
So the main difference is how they're made. Mined diamonds are found under the Earth's crust and are naturally created through extreme pressure. But lab-grown diamonds are made by humans.
Interesting. So what does that mean for consumers?
Well, in the past few years, there's been a pretty big increase in popularity and interest for lab-grown diamonds. I spoke to a few different Missouri jewelers about how this trend has played out in Missouri and what it means for them. Here's that story. Fog fills the air as Robert Flynn works a machine to clean a ring at Betts Jewelers in Columbia. Flynn is a gemologist and the co-owner of the store. Over the past 7 years, gems like the ones in the ring he's cleaning have increased in popularity at Betts. These gems are lab-grown diamonds.
Initially, we sold very few lab-grown diamonds, but as time has gone on and the average consumer is more aware of that as an option, today, most consumers that come through our doors have heard of man-made or lab-grown diamonds.
According to the Gemological Institute of America, lab-grown diamonds have been commercially available since the mid-80s. At first, buyers were hesitant to choose a lab-grown diamond over a mine diamond, but in the past few years, there's been an increase in interest in the man-made jewels. According to research firm Allied Market Research, the global market share for lab-grown diamonds was about $22 million in 2021. It's projected to rise to over $55 million by 2031. That's nearly 150% growth. Jack Azalian is a professor at the University of California, San Diego, and Santiago Canyon College, and he's a gemology expert. Gazalian says there are a couple reasons for the rise in popularity.
Now there's a lot of demand in lab-grown because of the price point, of how the nature of the process is, which is safer than mining for the sake of the global impact.
Eric Swanson is the main diamond buyer at Neustetter's Fine Jewelers in St. Louis. Neustetter's sells both mined and lab-grown diamonds, but lab-grown ones are more popular. Swanson says both types of diamonds are legitimate and look the same.
The analogy I like to use is when you walk into a flower shop, you never ask, are those real flowers? You know they're real, but they don't grow wild. You don't go out and pick them in a field. They grow them in a greenhouse where they can control all of the conditions, temperature, humidity, fertilizer, light. You get a bigger, prettier flower.
Flynn says lab-grown diamonds have made the jewelry industry more accessible.
It has opened the door to retail consumers who might have been priced out of a larger natural diamond that now is in a price point that they can afford a crystal of either the size or quality that maybe they could not afford before.
Swanson says there are significant price differences between lab-grown and mined diamond rings.
If I go from a one-carat diamond, a nice one-carat diamond in lab-grown is going to be $1,500 to $2,000. The same thing in a mined diamond is going to be $4,000 or $5,000.
But lab-grown diamonds are also becoming more widely socially accepted. Flynn says lab-grown diamond consumers vary more in age today than they did 5 years ago.
Originally, I would say it was the younger, newly engaged, getting married couples that were purchasing lab-grown diamonds. Today, we're selling a lot of large crystals to women who are celebrating milestone anniversaries, 20, 25th, 30th anniversaries.
Gary Setley is a jeweler at Setley Jewelers in St. Louis. He talks about the environmental benefits of lab-grown compared to the procedures used to mine natural diamonds.
It's environmentally sustainable, and it's meaning that it is, you don't have to worry about earth movement and not only tearing up the earth, but also the processes in which the mining procedures are horrendous, both with the labor, the toxic chemicals, the mining itself, it's all by the wayside.
However, Gazalian, the gemology expert from California, says there's a slight financial downside to buying lab-grown.
Chemically, optically, and physically, it's the same thing as its natural counterpart, but it does not have any resale value.
But this only matters if consumers are looking to sell their diamonds down the road. Swanson says because the types of diamonds are physically indistinguishable from one another, consumers don't notice any differences.
Diamond is a diamond. Nobody's going to know. Nobody asks, is that mined or natural? Because the ones we sell are so beautiful, everybody just goes, wow. When they see them, they open the box, they say, wow.
For our next story, we're hearing about an industry that has seen major growth within the past year.
And what would that be?
Marijuana. After recreational marijuana was legalized in Missouri in 2022, the state's industry has grown into a billion-dollar market. Currently, the only way new entrepreneurs can enter the industry is through an ongoing microbusiness license program. State regulators are in the process of dispersing these licenses.
Got it. And what does that process look like?
So under the amendment, the state's Cannabis Regulation Department will give out 144 micro-licenses to sell, grow, or cultivate marijuana to applicants who meet certain criteria, like having been previously arrested for a nonviolent marijuana-related crime or having a net worth under $250,000. The first round of the program wrapped up last year, and the second round will begin this month.
Got it. So what should potential applicants know about this second round?
Missouri Business Alert reporter Lucy Valesky spoke with Abigail Vivas, the Chief Equity Officer of Cannabis Regulation, about this. Here's some of their conversation.
So looking forward to this second round of applications, what are some of the rules from the program that worked really well during the first application process?
You know, we did a hot wash in January, just the entire process. Everybody in the department that was involved in it got together and we discussed, you know, what worked, what didn't work. And really kind of what we found is that we felt like we did a really good job. There was definitely some places where we thought, you know, just within the department, our internal processes that we could be more efficient or offer some more collaboration to make things go a little smoother or faster. But overall, we felt like we did a really good job. I think for my office, for the Office of Business Opportunity, for us, our goal this time was to be able to get out there earlier for outreach and get that information out there. And then we've been adding new tools and guidance on the website to help people through that application process.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. I know there are a lot of outreach programs and information on the website during that first round. And what were some of your biggest takeaways from those outreach programs? And what will outreach look like this time around?
So we actually just had our very last event, and some of the things that we did, so now the department does have an email list that people can sign up for to receive different types of information. And I think that's really helped us to communicate with interested parties. You know, before we didn't really have a way to notify people when new information was published to the website. So now we're sending out a weekly email that tells people these are the upcoming events that we have. This is the new stuff that we've posted to the website to help people, you know, find that information more easily in a more timely fashion. But we are still looking to do some events with some of our stakeholder groups. MoCan Trade has some events next week that I'll be attending. So just working with other groups now from now until when we start accepting licenses April 15th.
Kind of going back to the lessons learned element, what are some of the lessons from the first round that you're bringing into this round?
I think as far as the internal processes with the department, like just trying to tighten up some of those things. But really, we did feel like we did a good job. But we did do a survey for everybody that applied for a license that went out to them. And we took those results and looked at the things that people told us, the feedback they gave us, good and bad, about what we could do to improve that process. So some of the things involve in the actual application itself, providing some additional guidance or information to make a few things more clear. We've got some additional examples of some of the documentation that people have to provide on the website, trying to do outreach, not just in like in some additional spaces. And we probably will be offering a webinar as we get closer to the application date as well to make it accessible for people who maybe couldn't attend an event. But there's always stuff you can do to improve, and the list is long. I'm an office of two, so we collaborate with everybody in the department to try and make all those things happen.
Yeah, what were some of the challenges putting together that like initial program during the short timeline that you had?
So that was the challenge. So since it was brand new, we have this framework for what the department's already doing with medical, but we have this new license type. So building a new application type, building out the outreach events, the tools, the resources, what the process looks like as things move through the department. The lottery was a brand new thing for us. So what did that look like and who, you know, were we going to work with to conduct that? So just developing all the processes that go along with the application submission, the review of the application, issuing the licenses. At least we had a little bit of a framework, like I said, from medical licensing process, but there were still a lot of new things that we had to develop.
I guess my last question would be, a lot of people are planning to apply again or apply for the first time. So what would be the one thing that you want people to know going into the second round of applications?
I'd say the one thing for people to know is to just really do some research outside of what's provided on our website about what it really means to own and operate a cannabis business, because it is a very highly regulated field. And there's a lot of things that go on with that that people maybe haven't considered, like having a odor control plan or a waste disposal plan, the level of security that's required. So I think just really knowing what goes into being a compliant cannabis business and what that looks like.
It is now time for us to get into our words of the week. Ansley, what's yours this week?
My word is TikTok.
Okay, that could mean so many things. Are you referring to a clock or the app or like the Kesha song?
Yes, but only to the first two. And that's because the social media app's time could be running out in the US.
Are you talking about what's going on in the federal government right now?
Yes, the House passed a bill this week that could ban TikTok in the United States.
So why and how would that happen?
Legislators are concerned that TikTok could pose a national security threat due to the Chinese ownership of its parent company, ByteDance. If the bill passes, it will give ByteDance 6 months to find a buyer for TikTok before it becomes illegal to carry the app on app stores and across the internet.
So what's next for the bill?
The bill is headed to the Senate. If it passes, President Biden will have to sign it for TikTok to really be in trouble. That's all for me this week. What's your word, Siggy?
My words are homeowner benefit agreement.
And why is this in the news?
Last Friday, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey sued a Florida real estate firm for allegedly employing aggressive sales tactics and misleading marketing to enroll homeowners in its homeowner benefit agreement products.
What does this agreement do?
The agreement basically enticed homeowners with cash incentives to commit to utilizing the company's brokers for any future home sales. A 40-year lien on customers' homes was included to enforce the agreement product, and in 2021, 380 Missourians were convinced to enter into the agreement. That's all for me this week. For a closing thought, here's Robert Flynn again on the future of the diamond industry.
I think that it's going to continue to flourish and thrive. Lab-grown diamonds have allowed a whole new sector of consumers to enter the fine jewelry market.
Well, that is all for this week. The M33 Project provided the music for this episode. For my co-host, Ansley Franco, editors Brianna Davis, Gabriella Lacey, Sharon Rickabdar Xavier, Skylar Rossi, and Michael Stacey, I'm Siggy Reese, and this has been Business Brief. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.